In a world brimming with complexity, few creatures embody harmony like the honeybee. With tireless precision, she dances from bloom to bloom, each motion guided by millennia upon millennia of instinct, each act in service to the whole. And then there are the beekeepers, watchful stewards of this ancient symbiosis. Part agri-scientist, part poet, they move along their hives with the efficiency of Moe, Larry, and Curly, tending to the bees' needs as best they can comprehend, and with the infrequency of a waterfall in the Sahara, sometimes running off, flapping and flailing like a penguin on a hot sidewalk. This is their journey.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by our good friends over at Man Lake. You know, keeping Varroa in check is important all year round, but especially in the fall as we prepare our bees for winter. So what's your plan? Do you know what your mite loads are? If they're high, what will you do and when? Can you even spell IPM? I don't claim to have all the answers. In fact, nobody has all the answers. But today we're going to have a discussion with Amber Leach from Vito Pharma about their newest treatment option. First, a few fun beekeeping stories told in the beekeeper's own words. I didn't think it was funny, but somebody watching would have laughed their off. It's a cautionary tale about keeping the ground around your apiary and the path to and from the apiary clear of obstructions. I was carrying a full super from the apiary to be extracted. I had a tangled garden hose laying across the path. The scene is set. The predictable happened. I dropped the box, lurching and stumbling with the hose around my ankle. The frame spilled out. I landed in the pile of frames and got honey all over me in my bee suit. The good news was the bees didn't automatically come after me. They were more interested in the honey. And in just, it seemed like a split second, I was covered with bees. Running away wasn't going to work. Fortunately, the honey had the bees preoccupied, so I hobbled a few feet away, took off the bee jacket, which was covered with bees, and left it and the bees hanging on a tree branch. My honey-smeared, bee-covered pants were a different problem, not so easily solved. I couldn't take them off outside. My wife thought it was hilarious while she was hosing me off. All right, next story. My friend came to visit. He was afraid of bees but wanted to see my hives. At the time, I would do my inspections in shorts and a t-shirt. I gave him my beekeeper hat and veil, and he watched from about 30 feet away while I opened the hive and took out a frame. Of course, the bees completely ignored me and flew all the way over and stung him. This is just further evidence that bees sense fear. I had one more, but it involved someone throwing up before they could get their veil unzipped and off. Let's just leave it at that. Hey, I'd like to welcome our very special guest today, Amber Leach, coming to us from the Denver area. Good morning, Amber.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Fantastic. We don't have snow yet, so I can't complain.
Well, we don't have snow yet, so I can complain because I love the snow. You're just on the other side of the mountains from me.
Yeah, we love the snow as long as we're prepared with firewood, and we're not.
I'm not quite there yet either. So, and we do a lot of our heating that way. I love it.
That's how we do too.
Yeah. So are you up in the mountains or down in the Denver metro area?
So we're south of Denver about an hour in Monument. So we're about 7,500 feet. So we get snow a lot of times before the rest of the Front Range does.
You are high up there. Now, have you been a beekeeper for a long time?
About 11 years.
About the same as I have, but I'm sure you know 10 times more than I do. Because you happen to work for Vito Pharma, Would you just tell us what your position is there and a very brief what the products are that you guys sell?
Sure. I'm North American sales manager. So when I came on board, I was responsible for both the U.S. and Canada. And about a year ago, I handed Canada off to some other folks that were, one, more fluent in French, and it was much easier for them to get in and out of those places that I couldn't get to. And a lot of times there were conflicts with shows and conventions, and we want to make sure that we're able to get as many places as possible. So now I'm just responsible for sales and management in the U.S.
But you speak a little French because your company's based in France.
Zero French, but I'm working on my Spanish. We have a really multicultural team, which makes it it makes it interesting for meetings. A lot of different accents and a lot of different backgrounds, so everybody brings their expertise to the table. And so I know a few words in many different languages, thanks to my colleagues, but fluent in none of those. Probably much to everyone's chagrin, English is, you know, my first and only real language, truthfully.
And you sound like you're from the South somewhere.
I am. I was born and raised in West Virginia, and I raised my kids in Kentucky, and we've only lived in Colorado really for about 5 years.
Yeah, there's no Colorado accent going on there. Hey, tell us about Veto. You guys are the anti-Varroa team. What are your products for helping us fight Varroa?
So Veto Pharma has been around now for about 44 or 45 years. And their singular focus has always been really apiculture and the proliferation of a healthy honeybee population. And the strong focus is at this point, that may change in the future, but our strong focus at this point is really varroa mite management, from testing to treatment. And we have a whole host of products that are currently available and that are coming down the pipeline to make that happen.
One of the things that we talk about a ton on this show is testing. Test, 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 and know where you're at. We are very agnostic as far as treatment. We have some guests come on that are completely treatment-free beekeepers. We have some that are the opposite. We have some in between. And our belief is to educate everybody and then let them make their own decisions. So that's what we're doing here. We're not doing an infomercial for Veto, but really to just tell people, I mean, everybody knows how big of a problem Varroa is. Let's talk about another one of the solutions. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about your Varroa Easy Check, because I have to admit, I haven't used it yet. I have the old-fashioned quart jar with the hardware cloth on top. Tell me how the Easy Check works.
So the Easy Check works similarly to a mason jar with hardware wire, which is how I started when I was testing my bees in the beginning. But you fill the container up with the correct amount of bees, approximately 300 bees is what the measurements are. And there are some lines in the lid that let you know that you've put enough bees in there. It'll work three different ways, really, with an alcohol wash, which we would acknowledge that's industry standard and really our personal preference, just because we don't have anything more scientific than that, even though it's not super, super reliable in terms of science. It is the most reliable thing that we have on the market across the board. You can also do a sugar roll or a sugar shake. And then we also have marketed a CO2 injector, which allows you to use CO2 to just kind of anesthetize the bees, and the mites fall off after that. And then the bees theoretically rejuvenate, and you can put them back in the hive. So there's three different ways that you can use it: alcohol, sugar, and CO2. And we love when folks test both before and after treatment so that they can get first a baseline, and then after treatment, measurement to know, okay, did this mite treatment work for me? Is this the right time of year to use the mite treatment? And all the other variables that come into play when you know whether or not you're going to choose that same mite treatment next year at the same time or a different time.
Let's get into that part of the topic, because I believe one of the problems that a lot of beekeepers have is finding something that works for them and then using it every year, year in and year out. What is wrong with that scenario?
We're creatures of habit, so it's always a tough conversation, especially with hard-headed folks. And I think that pretty much applies to all beekeepers. I think we all have a tendency to be a little hard-headed, myself included. So I'm not pointing the finger outward. I'm pointing it back at myself, too. So just like with antibiotic resistance, you know, some of the things that contribute to resistance are virtue of how the bacteria and the antibiotics work. But there's so much of that that is human contribution. And I say that because my background is in human medicine, human pharmaceuticals. So it's really, really kind of shaped how I think about an IPM. So the human contribution piece is you use a product when it's not needed. So kind of overkill, if you will, or using a product too long, or not using the product long enough, not using the product correctly. So there are a whole host of things that can just make the train come off the tracks. And all of those contribute overall to your mites developing a resistance to a particular miticide. So we really, I tease whenever I'm at shows and I'm talking to beekeepers, I hope that folks betray me to every other miticide that's on the market. Because I work at Vito Pharma and I get these products for free. So in theory, I would never have to pay for a mite treatment if I didn't value an IPM. And Vito Pharma really values the IPM. We know that there's room for almost every product that's on the market at the table. And when that happens, which is usually kind of a fantasy world for most of us, I've never seen consistently folks doing what theory says that you should do repeatedly. I've never seen folks doing that, whether it's on the commercial side or hobbyists. And well, never might be a strong word. They're a handful. I wish that that would be the takeaway from this whole discussion. No matter what products folks are using in their hives, if you're testing before and after, then it makes your choices as to what you're using a whole lot simpler.
Yeah, if you don't know that it's working, right. And I've had some beekeepers in my area come to me and say, hey, I tested, my mite load is really low, we're going into fall, what should I treat with now? And I say, don't. If you don't have mites, why treat? So that's another reason that we need to be doing our testing. I don't claim to be any kind of an expert on all of these chemicals. Tell me a little bit about Ametraz. That's in your Apivar product, right?
Correct. So Ametraz is a synthetic active ingredient. It's been an industry standard really for about 10 years. We launched Apivar about 10, 11 years ago now. And it's been an industry standard, but a lot of folks can also get it from Mexico and other places in a 2-liter or a 1-liter concentrated bottle, and then they apply it in a different way. And a lot of times that's out of necessity. A lot of times it's cost containment. A lot of times it's a whole host of different reasons that it would take a whole other podcast to cover that. But Ametraz is just an active ingredient that is known industry-wide to be kind of the cornerstone for mite treatment.
Right. Now, as we've all heard about, and we've talked about a lot here about the bee die-off this winter, the winter of 2025, and how bad it was here in North America with over 1.1 million colonies lost from commercial beekeepers. The researchers looking into it have determined one of the causes, and there's more than just one, is Ametraz resistance. It almost sounds like Ametraz worked so well that everybody just started leaning on it too hard. Would you say that's what happened? Where did this resistance all of a sudden come from?
The same place that antibiotic resistance comes from, misuse or overuse is one of the highest contributors. That's not to take away from the fact that there are true pockets of resistance that have been found in Europe and in the U.S., but they're so few and far between that a blanket statement saying that there's a resistance to Ametraz as a whole, and when I say whole, I mean the beekeeping industry altogether, I think that that's probably a gross miss, an overstatement. We are our own problems, really, at the end of the day.
And you've come up with an Apivar 2.0. Tell me about that.
So Apivar 2.0 is different enough from original Apivar that we will be phasing out original Apivar eventually, and we're working towards that currently. So original Apivar has 3.3% Ametraz in it. Apivar 2.0 has only 3%. However, each strip still contains about 500 milligrams per strip. The strips are easily manipulated. You can fold them over the top of the frames because not everybody uses Langstroth hives. We know that. Original Apivar has just Ametraz and then a plastic powder that's combined to make a contact miticide strip. And the new strip, the Apivar 2.0 strips, have three inactive ingredients and the Ametraz. So one of those is the plastic. One of those is a release enhancer so that it releases properly the way that we have designed it to release. And then another one is a moisture scavenger that helps maintain the stability of the Ametraz strip while it's in the hive. And there's no withholding period. I guess that would probably be the biggest attraction to most folks is that you don't have to wait to put your honey supers back on.
Let's talk about the things that we need to be careful of wherever you're getting your Ametraz, as far as temperature, as far as honey supers, all these things. What do we need to watch out for?
So it needs to be stored in a cool, dry place. Once you open it, it needs to be used within pretty short order. It's good for 2 years from the manufacturing date on the package.
If you're a beekeeper like me, we're getting into that favorite time of year, honey harvest. But it can be a lot of work. That's where Mad Lake comes in. They have everything you need to make the job easier, cleaner, and more efficient. Removal aids, refractometers, uncapping tools, extractors, tanks, wax melters, even the jars and labels. Plus, they have free shipping on glass containers. Whether you're a hobbyist with two hives or a full-blown commercial operation, Mad Lake has it all. And don't forget your discount code, MLBLOVE10, it's in the show notes, for $10 off your first $100 purchase.
Most of the things to look out for are storage and application to make sure that you're doing it correctly. And it's honestly, I think, one of the easiest products to use for a new beekeeper. So I don't think that there's a whole lot to it that you can mess up unless you just kind of go cowboy or go rogue and decide not to follow the directions that are on the label. I think it's really straightforward. I think it's really simple. And a lot of times I think it might be one of the best things to suggest for a new beekeeper because it's hard to mess it up.
Speaking of new beekeepers, let's say somebody is buying a package of bees next spring. I think a lot of people assume when they get their bees, they're completely clean. There's going to be no mites. I'm starting from scratch. With no mites, there's no resistance. I don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. Is that the case or is that a false assumption?
I think like everything else in life, and I'm not trying to skirt your question, but I think it just depends. I think it's important to know where your bees are coming from. If you live out this direction, there's a really good chance that if you're buying packages or nukes that they're coming out of California, they're coming straight from almonds. And that just depends on the beekeeper, what they use, how they use the product. If you are in the middle of Kansas and you're getting bees locally, probably you can count on knowing your beekeeper. You can know the source. So it just depends. But those are all great questions to ask. Have they been treated? What have they been treated with? Where are they coming from? Is it coming from a commercial operation? Are these local bees? So there are just a ton of questions, and the list just gets longer and longer. You know, the longer you do this, the more you realize I have way more questions than answers. So my list of questions just continues to get longer and longer.
That's perfect. The more questions, the better. I guess the point I was trying to get at, I have found you can buy a package or a nuke that's come from somewhere else or even locally to you that already has mites in it. And so don't assume that these are clean, that they don't need to be treated, or that they don't have any resistance, or that, you know, they don't have any other disease or something like that, because they can. Hopefully they don't, but they often can.
Sure. And a lot of times, you know, when in a commercial operation, when the bees are ready to come from California to us in the form of packages and nukes, it's a whole process of just shaking bees into packages. So to assume anything about those bees, you don't assume that they're queenright. You don't assume that they've had enough to eat. You don't assume that they have no mites. You have to treat it just like you would any other beehive. And you know, if you get a package and there's only 10,000 bees in it, nobody wants to kill 300 bees immediately. And I don't necessarily think that should be everyone's approach right out of the gate, especially if you are getting bees. Some places it's warmer than others, and you can get your packages in February, March, April. Here, sometimes we don't see package deliveries until June. And again, it'll just depend on your geography. And one of the best pieces of advice that I can give anybody who's a backyard beekeeper or a hobbyist or even a sideliner, you know, growing into a sideliner, is apprentice yourself to the key opinion leaders in your area. Because I started my beekeeping journey in the Midwest, in the South. And when I came here, it was like starting over. So beekeeping at 7,500 feet is not at all like keeping bees at sea level. So it's important to know that the words always and never don't usually apply to anything, but especially beekeeping.
Absolutely. What kinds of things have you learned? For those of us that haven't kept bees at 7,500 feet, still might be interesting to hear.
Oh gosh. Well, the year we moved here, it snowed 2 feet September the 8th. So this time, 5 years ago, we were getting pounded with snow. I had strips in my hives, and I had just started my treatment. Because back in Kentucky, where we moved from, we could still be getting a fall harvest in September or October. So we knew that it was going to be colder. We knew that it was going to snow. But the day before that, we were fishing in 80-degree weather. So it was a shock to us. So I'll always be prepared to pivot. Always try to get ahead of the curve. It's really easy as a beekeeper, and I've done it. I've been guilty myself. Summer gets away from you, and unless you're a commercial beekeeper, and it can get away from them too. But if you're just a hobbyist and you have kids and sports, or you have weddings or vacations planned, it's really easy for summer to get away from you. And I've learned that you have to be much more diligent. I thought whenever I started my beekeeping journey that journaling was silly. And I've learned that journaling is not silly. I need to know exactly what's happening. And if I have it at my fingertips, it's much easier to reference that. So I've learned to try to get ahead of the game faster and more consistently, and to document everything, because my memory isn't what I would like for it to be, unfortunately. And I think we're all in that boat.
Join the club. What kinds of things do you do to prepare your bees for winter?
It's almost completely centers around mite control. I know that it's really easy to get caught up in, especially if you're a hobbyist and you don't necessarily look at your beekeeping journey as a business venture. And sometimes we see them as a hobbyist. A lot of times my beekeepers will see them as pets, or, you know, the girls or the ladies. And the real difference in a hobbyist and a commercial beekeeper is that it's just business to a commercial beekeeper. They don't have time to gingerly put the honey supers back on and avoid crushing the bees. Sometimes the bees die. And you know, hobbyists are more inclined to go slower and to avoid trying to kill the bees.
Do you use any kind of insulation or anything like that on your hives?
I know a lot of people do wrap their bees. I don't here in Colorado. I never did in the Midwest and in the South, because our winters are really, really mild. And that's not to say that there's not need or room for wrapping hives. Some of my Canadian friends, some of the folks up north in the Dakotas, those guys I know do wrap sometimes. Sometimes they have their bees in an indoor facility, but bees have been in existence way before we decided to put them in a box and then in our backyard. They are quite capable of making it through the winter. They're quite capable of keeping themselves warm. They've been doing that well before we got involved. When you consider the human contributions to that, you know, if you put them in a box and you're feeding them sugar water and it's freezing outside, that's not going to work for your bees. Or if you put them in a box and then you take all of their honey and they're left with no food all winter and now they have no place to go, they are going to starve to death. So that's when weather really makes a difference, at least in my experience. But I sometimes will build a windbreak because it does get pretty windy here in Monument. But aside from that, I make sure that I don't take all of their resources, and I make sure that their mite loads are as close to non-existent as I can get, because from the first snow, which could be September the 8th, to snow melt, which could be June of the following year, that's a long time to try to live on, you know, just a few frames of honey. So I try to make sure they have at least a box and a half of honey going through the winter.
All right, let's have a little fun. You've been beekeeping long enough, you have to have some kind of a crazy or embarrassing or painful story that you can tell us about. Anything come to mind?
I have one that probably covers all three of those. I used to teach a beekeeping 101 at the local library back in Kentucky. And one of my students quickly became one of my friends. She was quite adept. and one time had asked me if I would check on one of her hives while she was on vacation. I was glad to do it. I was glad to help. And no matter what the books say, we don't always do that, right? We always tease that the bees didn't read the books. Well, sometimes even when the beekeeper reads the books, we don't follow the rules. And I was checking on one of her hives, and I'd been in this hive with her previously. It was unexpectedly very hot. In just about a 3-week period, it had gone from just an easy hive to inspect to really hot. And I hadn't zipped my veil up all the way, and one immediately got in my veil and stung me, you know, on this really tender area under your chin. And I did exactly what you're not supposed to do, which is rip my veil off. It was just a human reaction. I knew better. And within, I don't know, a minute, these bees were all over me. I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. They were all over me. I probably had 10 or 15 bee stings all on my head and neck area. My son was up, just up on a little hill not too far away by the lake, and there was nothing for me to do except head towards the car. But as I did, now I'm bringing all of these angry bees with me to him. So I'm trying to yell ahead, you know, get in the car. And it's at 7 or 8 years old, I think he thought I was dying. So he was pretty scared. And then when I get to the car, I'm not allergic to bees. One or two or three stings at a time that I know of. But with 15 or 20 stings, and my face was swelling quickly, like from here to my neck, it looked like kind of a turkey. Like I had no neck. It was just swollen, full of inflammation. And the local hospital was 25 miles away. So I called a couple of girlfriends and I'm like, listen, if you don't hear from me in pretty short order, you should probably come looking for me. And they knew where I was. So they would have to like reverse engineer the route to get to me. But I'm not going to lie, I was concerned. I was concerned. My son was concerned. My friends were concerned. It turns out to be that just, you know, some Benadryl and a good rest helped. But I didn't look like myself for at least a week. It's
really scary.
I looked pretty deformed. And it was my fault. I knew better. You know, it wasn't my first year.
We always claim it's our fault. Can't be the bee's fault. Even though they were hot that day. Anyway, that sounds scary. You don't have a picture of yourself all swollen up, do you?
I don't. I didn't take one.
Okay.
No, but by the time I got to the car and got my veil off, my hair was just completely, I looked like I'd just gotten out of the shower. I was a sweaty mess.
Okay, I thought you were going to say you ran and jumped in the lake.
No, but, you know, if I had been thinking at all, I might have.
Isn't it funny the things that we do when we panic?
It was sheer panic.
We had somebody on the show a while back that when he was a new beekeeper had something sort of like that happen where one bee got inside his veil. And if that's never happened to you, that's a whole new experience when you actually see the back of the bee instead of the underside of the bee.
Yeah.
And usually they're not coming for you. They actually want to get out of the veil. But anyway, this guy freaked out a little bit differently than you, though. He started hitting at it like this until he finally gave himself a bloody nose and a fat lip and did more damage than the bee would have. But anyway, glad you're okay. That's a little terrifying.
Yeah, I made it out unscathed, you know, minus the 15 or 20 bee stings, but
that's a lot of bee stings at once.
A lot of bee stings. Yeah, I'm still not allergic, knock on wood.
All right, before I let you go, I'm just curious. I know you work with all kinds of beekeepers. As far as working with commercial beekeepers, is there anything that you've learned from them that you might want to share with hobbyists and sideliners?
One of the things that I think commercial beekeepers are so much better at than we are is that they see it as just business. From the finances of it to how they take care of the bees to they don't coddle the bees. I'm not saying that, you know, we need to be abusive to the bees, and none of my beekeepers are that I've ever met. But to say, I don't want to kill 300 of my bees to do an alcohol wash because that just seems brutal. Having a hive die through the winter is much more brutal, and it's heartbreaking. If you only have one hive, or you only have two hives, or no matter how many hives you have, really, but if you wake up in spring and you have no hives left because of your own negligence, and that's really what it is. If you're not testing before and after, and if you're not treating, if you And I know some folks that do treatment-free very successfully, but that's not what I would advise for a first or second or third year beekeeper. That's something that's well into what I think is a journey where you've gained enough knowledge to manage that. And you have a much different lifestyle than a commercial beekeeper. But to answer your question, I think that we have to look at it as a business because it is an investment. And if you have one hive going into the winter, you might have $750, $800, $900 invested in this hive. So 300 bees dying in a mite wash, while it sounds harsh and it sounds brutal, it's much more cost conducive to approach beekeeping that way than to buy a new package in the spring. So if commercial beekeepers could teach us anything, it's that it has to be just business, because you take the emotional piece out of it, and then I think you're much more successful if you're not so concerned about the here and now. You have to be thinking 3 and 4 and 6 months ahead, and that's how you approach your treatment and your testing. I think commercial beekeepers are so much better at that than we are as hobbyists.
I like to try to get inside the mind of the bees too and think, what would they do if they truly understood the situation? I think they would send 300 bees out and jump in your tester because that's what they do. Yeah. Right? They have guard bees that are willing to risk their life to protect the hive. And during the busy time of the year, you may have 1,000 bees emerge in one day anyway. 300 isn't that many when you look at it that way.
Yeah. You have a queen can lay, 1,000, 1,500 bees in a day. The 300 really is impacting her production. It's not at all. And that at the shows where I am, not the commercial shows, but the ones where I'm talking to hobbyists and backyard beekeepers, that's the thing that I get all the time. They'll test before or they'll test after, but they won't test both. I'll give you an example because I think this is really important. I had a beekeeper, a very, very knowledgeable, very experienced beekeeper, message me not long ago, and they had some hives that their counts were really high, 40s, 50s, 60s. And at that point, it's a ticking time bomb. But they used Apivar, and they tested for efficacy midway through the treatment period and found that their mite loads were still really high, 10, 12, 20. To put it in real-world terms, you have asked a product to work in a situation that was unthinkable. Apivar is an Apivar 2.0. Even though it works faster, you get the maximum result at about week 3. So it's a little bit faster than Apivar, original Apivar. But if you have a beehive that has mite loads that are that high, a slow-release product, which is what Apivar was intended to be, that's not your best option because you have a hive that's ready to implode already. So he was very frustrated that Apivar didn't work the way that he said, the way that we have said that it would work and so on and so forth. But my message to him was, it did work. It worked really, really well. It just didn't work in a way that's going to get your beehive through the winter. Because if you go from 40 or 50 mites down to 10 or 12 mites in a 4-week period, the product's working. But you can't test in the middle of it to see what the efficacy is, because a long release treatment requires all of that time to do the work that it was designed to do. So if you don't test before and you experience a product or what you think is a product failure, is it really a product failure, or was your mite load so high that no product would have worked? And a lot of beekeepers, because they don't want to kill their bees, they'll say, well, we know we have mites, so we're just going to treat anyway. And I get that. I do. And to be honest, that was how I approached my first year or two in beekeeping. I don't want to kill my bees. I know that I need to treat. I know that I have mites. I'm just going to use something. And the first year, I started with 3 hives. I used Apigard. 2 of my hives died. I hated Apigard. I thought Apigard was the worst product in the world. Fast forward 3 or 4 more years, I love Apigard. Apigard is part of my IPM. I've just learned that I was the problem, not the product, not the bees, but that I didn't test appropriately, I didn't treat correctly, and all fingers point back to me. When a first or second, third year beekeeper tell me, my hives died, it's hard to say this, but it's almost always unequivocally the beekeeper's fault. It was my fault. It was the fault of a lot of my colleagues who started in a very similar fashion that I did. So for something to be the fault of a product or other circumstances outside the hive is much less likely than it is a beekeeper problem, truthfully. And that's hard to say. It's hard to hear.
That's one of the things that I've learned from speaking with commercial beekeepers is they don't wait until fall to treat. They're testing clear back in July, and they're treating in July if they need to, and August, and September. So that come October or November, you know, whenever they're buttoning up for winter, the mites aren't a problem. They're not trying to go from a 40 to a 6, you know, overnight, which is just, as you're talking about, isn't reasonable for any kind of treatment.
Right.
So start early. Hey, I'm as guilty of this stuff as anybody.
We all are.
Start early.
Start early and consistent. I have some folks that are testing 5 and 6 times a year. That's, you know, thousands of bees at the end of the day. It's better than hundreds of thousands of bees, which is what's going to happen if you don't test.
Absolutely. Thanks for all your wisdom, Amber. I've really enjoyed it. If anybody wants to reach out to you, I'll put a link to Vito Pharma in the show notes. And hey, keep in touch.
Thank you. Thank you. And if anybody has questions, please provide my email address. They're welcome to reach out.
Will do. All right, Amber, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks for joining us on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. If you like this content, I hope you'll share it with a friend, follow and subscribe to this podcast, and even sign up for our newsletter at beelovebeekeeping.com. Also, just a shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. We appreciate them. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Viroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.